Sometimes the fun begins when the paved road ends. Chevy Silverado 2500 HD is made to work hard and play hard on the road or off. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details and experience life in HD.
Thank you, Tim. 108. Hey, happy Friday. It's John Williams.
Drop of the puck. The game ends, and the Predators will take a one-game-to-none lead.
Lord have mercy.
Patrick Kane mixing it up with Kelly Yarncroft between the circles, Predator zone.
Wait a minute. We saw more action when the game was over last night than we did during the game. That little tangle, that little headlock was after the game had ended. I was there last night. I want to talk a little bit about how much fun and excitement playoff hockey is and was, even when you lose 1-0. But they're bigger than we are. They were meaner than we were. We didn't deserve to win that game last night. Doggone it. That was disappointing. And the fans were so there for the Blackhawks. I want to talk to John Weideman about that in just a couple of minutes. The play-by-play voice, of course, of the Blackhawks here on WGN. I meant to give this a little more love and time for you to win them yesterday. I did it at the very end of the show. Let's do it at the beginning of the show today. I've got the Rendezvous VIP experience for two at Cavalia Odiseo. This is that big show in town with the acrobats and the horses and the sort of Cirque du Soleil meets tumblers meets the cavalry. That's what this is. It is really unlike anything else you've ever seen before. And I keep describing it as art because you just see, there's no talking, there's anybody presenting to you. There's no ringmaster Ned. It's just horses and humans interacting, running, jumping, turning in unison, and then some just crazy stuff. And towards the end of the show, you will see that the horses are now sprinting across the stage, if you will. It's a giant area. Stage isn't right, but in front of you, you'll see horses running at breakneck speed and people doing things on them while the horses are doing that you think, oh my God, I'm about to witness something bad here. But nothing bad happens. It's amazing and entertaining. And we have this VIP experience, which includes this. Listen to this. Great seats to the show. There's not a bad seat. Full meal buffet dinner before. I did this a few nights ago, and it's awesome. I mean, it's a really good spread in this giant tent. Desserts at the intermission, because there's an intermission. Then you come back and get some coffee or a glass of wine or beer and some amazing desserts. Plus, you get to take a stable tour and meet the four-legged stars after the show. You can purchase tickets at Cavalia.com/Chicago. The Odiseo White Big Top is located at Soldier Field South Lot. That's where they're doing the show. And I've got a pair of tickets right now to caller number 7 at 312-981-7200. Call 312-981-7200. Are you calling right now? There's a lady out on the street.
I'm calling. It's busy.
I know, that's what happens.
But it's bring your daughter, your mother to work day. Come here, Amber.
Oh, this is your mom? We're now reaching.
This is my, I'm her mom, and she brought me to work with her.
Hi, ladies. Nice to meet you both.
Nice to meet you, John. Welcome back.
Nice of you to say that. I'm in the showcase. They're just outside, and you can call 312-981-7200. Really a nice prize. I'm surprised that I missed this, because this is the sort of nutty silliness that would catch my attention. On the World Series rings that the Cubs have with the 108 diamonds, the rubies and the sapphires, they're just awesome and gaudy and gigantic and blingy. They have the goat inscribed in the bottom of the ring. There's two voices that caught my attention on this today. Steve Rosenblum in the Tribune said, "I'm sorry, but putting a goat on the only championship rings in Cubs history is stupid." But Rick Tellender in the Chicago, who does he write for? The Sun-Times concluded his piece with, "And the Cubs have it, and they have their rings. And the part of the ring that might be the best of all, that little black goat head engraved on the inside gold." So one says it's the best part, and the other one says it's nutty and stupid. I can't believe they did that. I think it's a bad idea. It's too late. Nobody cares about my opinion. But seriously, the goat had nothing to do with the Cubs winning or losing. I'm not even sure it was a real... Oh, I guess it was part of the tradition, but it wasn't a part I wanted to embrace, even though I'm the guy that sent a goat to the Cubs game, no, to a Braves game in Atlanta to reverse the curse on them. But, you know, that was just what DJs and talk show hosts and silly people do. I don't think the organization ever embraced it. And for them to put that on the rings. Bertrand, your thoughts? Terrible idea or great idea?
Yeah, I'm a little surprised, but I don't mind.
Holy cow. If I was in that meeting, I'd go, no, no, no. This is a beautiful ring. It's a beautiful moment. Like, we do not need to go there. I mean, if you started to dredge up all of the things, dredge is the wrong word, but if you said, well, let's recollect something else that was important to the Cubs' history and their winning the ring, I don't know, put Ron Santo's number on there or a heel click or something about the 69 Cubs or something about something. I don't know.
Why does it bother you so much? I mean, it's their ring. They clearly, the Cubs weren't surprised by it. They decided to do it.
Well, I guess they did. I mean, yeah, they can do whatever they want, right?
Right.
It just seems to me like whenever I would talk to somebody in Cubs management, they weren't loving this part of the story.
You're right.
Because it was a dumb part of this. You know, like, we're trying to win baseball games here. The GOAT doesn't have anything to do with it. So let's stop talking about that. The same way they didn't really like the lovable losers, you know?
So they should have had, like, an image of Lou Piniella having the priest, or no, Dusty Baker doing the exorcism in the dugout?
No, I don't think they should have done that either.
That would have been bad, too.
And they don't need a black cat. I mean, really, no. There was no room on this ring for Steve Bartman, for crying out loud. We couldn't get him on there either.
Is it true they gave him one?
I don't know. I hope not. I hope not. By the way, foul ball guy, as I like to refer to you, because you don't want to be a public person, and I generally don't mention your name. Foul ball guy, I still want to talk to you on the radio. I want you to make your first, last, and only exclusive interview on this show. And your guy, the attorney that represents you when you do need somebody to say something, he trusts me, and he likes this show. Come on, foul ball guy. Steve, there were moments at the game last night. I was at the Blackhawks game where people were just cheering their fool heads off, only because we were having a pretty long possession. We had it in the zone for a pretty long time. We were getting shots. We were getting rebounds. We were keeping it on the net. And people were just going crazy. We were losing 1-0. It was just the most energetic crowd I've ever seen. I wanted to talk to John Weideman about last night and about our chances. You know, how does this series shake out? Before I get to that, just one quick email. Hi, John. Did either you or Steve Bertrand maybe yesterday really say, quote, so they're going to play the Montreal Expos? I believe this was when you were talking about the Blackhawks' first playoff game. I looked at my wife and said, did he really just say Montreal? It's true. We were talking about the playoff game, and Steve Bertrand said they play the Montreal Expos.
It wasn't the Montreal Expos?
Please, John, check your tape of the show. The Montreal Expos were a baseball team which either folded or moved elsewhere years ago.
They didn't go to Nashville and take up hockey? That's not the case? I think that was after I screwed up the Cubs score three different ways.
And so then we went there.
Right.
And it was a funny part of the show.
Ish.
I don't like to hold up the funny hat when, you know, I don't like to, like, turn on the funny light whenever we're trying to be funny. So we just kind of let those go. This letter writer continues, by the way, listen, he says, I've got Kimmel on right now, and I can't believe he asked this white blonde actress from South Africa, I must assume she's a Christian as she looks like one, that is, not Hindu, Buddhist, or Muslim, he asked if they celebrate Easter in South Africa, followed by 6 exclamation points. That's like someone asking us here in America if we celebrate Christmas. Christians all over the world celebrate Easter. It's a huge holiday. After 57 years in America, John, I still find it difficult to believe that for Americans there really is no Easter and no Good Friday. I leave my house on Good Friday, and anywhere I go, there's no difference between that day and any other day of the week. We ain't got no religion no more. Signed, Gunther.
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 I haven't heard from Gunther in a while.
He writes and listens and he cares.
And calls.
It's 117. Well, it is a talk show. John Weideman talks to us next on WGN. Ken, jump on here. I got 2 seconds for you. Then John Weideman says hi. Ken, what did you want to say? You're on WGN.
Real quick, I think that ring with the goat on is the neatest thing in the world. If you know Cubs history, which you do, of course, that is so neat to have that on there. It's probably one of the neatest championships. championship rings ever, and none's going to compare to it. Yeah, the GOAT's not real, but it was bred on the field. It is cool. And I can't believe you don't think that's tremendous to have something like that in your ring.
I've changed my mind completely. I now think it's one of the cleverest things, and it made the greatest ring ever even better.
But think about it. Think about it. I mean, go to any other championship. There's not going to be something as cool as the GOAT on there, like a GOAT. So I just got a call because I've been to diehard cup for all my life in my early 70s, but I think it's just unbelievable to have that GOAT on.
I'm really glad you called, Ken. Thanks for jumping in here, man.
Sure, thank you. Have a nice day. Bye.
You have a nice day. Hey, John Weideman, do you like the idea of the ring having the GOAT emblem on it for the Cubs World Series?
I have no problem with that. I think that makes those rings singularly unique. And, if I was a Cubs fan, I would think that would be cool. And if I was a Cubs player, I would know that I would have something that, you know, will never be produced again. Like, let's say if they win, John, let's say if they win another World Series coming up this fall. And that's entirely possible with as good of a team as they are. Would they put the GOAT on that ring? Probably not. So,
yeah, no. In fact,
I think it's cool.
In fact, Rosenblum said, "Well, then, are they going to put zero diamonds in there because it was 108 on the last one?" So it's just a little. No, it's just another ring now.
Oh no!
Nice to hear you, John. By the way, do the Blackhawks get for their Stanley Cups? Do they get rings too, like in baseball?
Yes, everybody did. Rocky Wirtz, the chairman, and. The chairman of the and owner of the Chicago Blackhawks has been exceedingly generous, and he made sure that everybody within the organization that had anything to do with the cup run received a ring. And I've had the good fortune of having three of them. They all live in a safe deposit box at the bank. So in case anybody's out there listening thinking, hey, Weideman's got them at his house, now forget that idea. They live in a safe deposit box. And I bring them out a couple times a year to show family members and that. And I am eternally grateful to Rocky for, all of the things that he's done for me and for my family. And the rings are just one big part of that.
I think the whole town's grateful, too. I mean, I was at the game last night and I was saying how, it sounds cliche, but it's true. Playoff hockey is unlike anything else. And there we were, not playing that well, losing 1-0. And there were times where we'd have some strong possessions, and the crowd was just like willing the team. They were cheering and cheering and cheering. While we weren't scoring, we were losing, but they were just so into it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I saw that too. I saw a thrust from the Blackhawks that third period that I think you're going to see at the start of tomorrow night's game. And Nashville, they need to be given a lot of credit. They got a tremendous goaltending effort from Pekka Rinne. That's his first, by the way, that's the first road shutout in franchise history for the Nashville Predators in the playoffs. So, good for them. It was a 1-0 shutout. And the Blackhawks, they didn't really throw everything but the kitchen sink at the Predators there in the third period. They got more shots actually in the second than they did third. But what I saw was the same thing that you just mentioned, and that was the raised intensity by the Blackhawks there in the third period. And I think everybody felt that at one point, the Preds were going to crack, but they were very good defensively in their end. And, they earned the win. It's a 7-game series, and now the Blackhawks need to win 4 out of 6. Not impossible. The scenario has been presented to them before. And usually what you see, I think, after a game like this is you see the Blackhawks really come with their best effort right from the puck drop of the next game.
So. I got two things I want to ask you about specifically. Mm-hmm. One is the physicality of the game, and the other one is how the crowd, though a lot of times, gets really frustrated, especially on a power play, when we don't seem to have a sense of urgency. And I think there are times where Patrick Kane is almost a little – I love his patience, but there are times where it feels like they're too cute, and people are screaming, put it on the goal, shoot the puck. And when they're dribbling back and forth, they hear that. They hear the frustration from the crowd. And I suppose they have to sort of block that out. No sense in just launching a shot to make all of us yahoos happy. But talk about that a little bit, John. Should they be a little more should they be shooting the puck more often?
Yeah, if you ask Joel Quenneville that question, he would say, well, we probably do need to have a shoot-first mentality. And I think you'll see that not only when the Blackhawks are on the power play, but I think at equal strength tomorrow as well. They got 29 shots away on Rinne last night, which is not a bad number. But they're capable of anywhere between that number and 45 in a given playoff
game. People were yelling all around me, John. They were just getting very frustrated.
Yeah, I could hear it too. We're up above 318, and I could hear him up there too. And I, you know, as a broadcaster, I was expecting to see shots. But one thing that's taken place on the ice, and I'll try and you know, allay the Blackhawk fans' fears here, and let you know that I see the same thing that you do. I have the same apprehension that you do. But one thing I see is I see the opposition jumping their bodies into the shooting lane.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, if you're shooting from out near the blue line, and let's say a Nashville player comes out and he's 10 feet in front of the guy that prospectively could shoot the puck, if that player, take a Blackhawk, anybody, Brian Campbell from the blue line, wants to fire it toward the net, well, a Nashville player gets in that shooting lane. If Campbell just says, the heck with you, I'm going to fire this, and if you get in the way and it hurts you, that's too bad. Well, he fires the puck at the guy. The puck hits the guy's shin pads and ricochets behind Campbell. Well, now maybe you've got a fast forward of the Predators that is out near the blue line and can dash behind Campbell and go get that loose puck at center ice and come in on a breakaway. You know, that can swing a playoff series. So it goes back to what Joel likes to call puck management. You hear that term a lot. And I just think that, you know, for this next game, what you're going to see is you're going to see shots from different angles, maybe even from below the goal line, with people moving to the front of the net looking for that loose puck. They'll get a little bit creative. Once they get a couple by, if they can get a couple by Pekka Rinne here in game two, I think things will loosen up a little bit, and then they'll get more and more chances. However, Nashville showed us last night that they can defend the front of their net. So this is not going to be easy. It's never an easy series with Nashville. It seems like it's going to be when you start it, but it never is.
That's why I didn't become a professional hockey player. Two big reasons. One was, I'm not getting in a sport where they say you stand in front of that guy and he's going to hit a hockey puck 60 miles an hour and you be the blocking guy. I'm not going to be the blocking guy. Number two, the other reason I didn't become a professional hockey player was I really don't skate that well, and I understand that that's, you know, pretty critical.
Yeah, that kind of is. Well, you know what, John? There's a lot you can do in your next life. Like, as an example, in my next life, I'm going to come back. I'm going to be smart. I'm going to be good looking. I'm going to be about 6'6", and I'm going to be real athletic. And girls are going to like me.
Hey, give me 30 seconds on the physicality. There were times it looked like they particularly were targeting Patrick Kane, and he seemed to have something to say about that at the end of the game. Was that a specific strategy, do you think, on their part?
Yeah, I do. I think that the Predators might be pushing that button a little bit. James Neal was the guy that was seemingly taking a few liberties with Patrick Kane, and some of those hits looked a little bit late. The officials didn't see it that way, so we have to go by what they see and what they do. But I'm sure that, you know, if Kane is going to them and saying, hey, you know, I don't mind getting hit, but the guy hit me 3 seconds after I passed the puck, and that should be interference. I think that message gets across. I don't know what we'll see in game two. I have a feeling that as the playoffs progress, the officials get a feel for the series and who the perpetrators are. And so I think in game two, you may see some of those called. But notwithstanding, even if they're not, you just have to play through that stuff. Troy Murray says it best. You got to play through that stuff. And you have to, you know, get to the next moment and try and make it better.
Well, we should be used to being smaller than the other team anyway. So it's not like we can't get around that. All right. Well, listen.
John, I don't, real quick, John, before on that subject, I don't want to interrupt your train of thought, but just so the listeners know, and just FYI, we get out hit just about every single game. And that's because our guys have the puck. So, you know, if you've got the hockey puck on your stick, you're not going to go looking for a check. So it's a puck possession kind of game, and so that's why the numbers are skewed that way.
It's an interesting point. Yeah. Well, it's a pleasure to hear you. You know, I'm back in town now, so I catch more of the games. And I always enjoy talking to you. Thanks for giving me some of your time, and let's make it 1-1.
Yeah, I hear you, John. And by the way, welcome back home. You were kind of a stranger up in the Twin Cities. I could never get used to that. So welcome home.
Yeah, I know. You know, listen, I tried to be a Wild fan, and it didn't work out that well for me. So it's good to be back here.
The fit just wasn't there. I know what you're saying.
See you, John.
All right. Take care, John.
John Weideman. Steve Bertrand's next. He's got some news for you. GN. Thank you, Steve. 1:37 now. This is John. I know what you're thinking. Hey, John, that sounds like Chairlift. Aren't they breaking up? It'll be at Park West tonight, the popular band out for 10 years. It's on their sort of goodbye tour. So if you are a Chairlift fan, and you'll never guess who is, producer Elif. Tonight's the night to see him at Park West. 1:38. Speaking of people smoking marijuana, I saw this story in the USA Today today. It says here, the Canadian government announced Thursday new legislation to legalize marijuana for recreational use. Not just a city, not just a province. Canada is poised to legalize marijuana for the whole flipping country, for recreational use. And this story is about how that might create a tourism rush from people here going there.
When we say rush,
you know what I mean?
It's not over. It's just starting, baby.
Possession of small amounts of pot will be legal throughout the country July 1st, 2018, if the legislation passes. The federal government set the minimum age at 18, but it will allow each province to determine if it could be higher. Those under 18 found with small amounts of marijuana would not face criminal charges. They're like, whatevs. Eh? Buying marijuana would be legal for travelers older than 18 visiting Canada. So yes, you, the Americans, who just happen to be in Montana, will be able to cross the border and buy it legally. I wonder if then you will see along the border, like you do firecracker stations in Indiana, or, you know, places to buy fireworks near the gas stations, commonly known as firecracker stations.
They don't want them too close to the gas station.
Every now and then I remind myself that Sean Spicer's job is not that much different than mine.
You know, it's funny because every once in a while you remind the rest of us, too.
Buying marijuana would be legal for travelers older than 18 visiting Canada. Canadian Public Safety Minister Ralph Goodale defended the legislation, saying current laws have been an abject failure at keeping minors from using marijuana and organized crime from profiting. Boy, doesn't that sound familiar? The measure would legalize possession of up to 30 grams of certain marijuana products and place harsher penalties if you sell pot to minors or drive under the influence. You know, whenever they do stories like this, they always put marijuana amounts in grams. I have no idea what that means. Somebody needs to explain to me what 30 grams is. Is that 2 joints or 10 joints? I don't know. Steve, you probably do.
I do, and I'm just not going to pretend to say because it would incriminate me.
Yeah. So I don't know if that's a lot or a little.
Picture the Teddy Graham cereal, and each gram, I think, is equal to one Teddy Graham.
Okay, each of those little cookie cereal pieces.
Yeah, you're not really believing that, are you?
So if that's a Teddy Graham, mm-hmm. that's 1 gram per little teddy bear.
Right. And then so?
So maybe about 5 would be 10. This is 30. I don't know. Somebody who smokes pot, tell me, is this a lot or not?
I think a lot of people are right now. They would have to.
I think that's surprising that
Canada,
the whole flipping country, is doing that.
There's one in South America, right? Is it Venezuela? I'm not sure which country in South America has legalized it.
I don't know that that's such a terrible idea. We seem to be going that way.
Right. Why not do it, get it over with? Take it out of the hands of individual cities and towns and...
Well, you know what it really would do, too, is make it easier for those people that are legally running those businesses in, say, Colorado, to handle the cash.
Well, that's a big thing. It also would allow Justin Trudeau to travel freely anywhere in his country.
Here we got some pot smokers. Tom's on line one. Hi, Tom. You're on WGN. What can you do for us?
No, I'm not smoking. I'm at work. But anyway, on a sweetener, artificial sweetener packet, that's 1 gram. It's marked right on the packet.
Oh, okay. Sure, that'd be a gram. Okay, but now, so then if that packet, so the amount of sugar
right.
you have in that packet, that would be a gram. You could have 30 of those little packets of marijuana legally in Canada. How much do you need for a... How much do you need for a single use, as it were?
That's a real good question. I mean, for sweetening, I have no idea.
Thank you, Tom. Yeah. Maybe Steve will help us out. Hey, Steve, you're on the air.
Hey, how are you, sir?
Good.
I'm going to explain this to you. So 30 grams would be like if you took one finger on top of another finger on top of another finger on top of another finger till you get to your thumb. Go straight across your baggie. That'd be about 30 grams worth. A little over an ounce. An ounce is 28 grams.
How many joints do you get out of that?
Depends on how big you want to roll them.
Yeah.
Usually about 25, I'd say. You know, about the size of your pinky finger, you get about 25 of those.
Oh, really? So this is worth, I mean, that would be, you know, a few weeks worth of. I don't know how much folks smoke, but that would be quite a lot, wouldn't it?
Well, some of us that are, you know, baby boomers, that lasts us about 2.5-3 weeks, I'm going to say.
Okay, right. Yeah. And what would you pay for that? How much would 30 grams run?
Nowadays, with the medical and everything and a lot of people with the blood in the market, no more than about 250. 200 to 250 for an ounce.
Yeah. See, that's funny because that's to me the difference between that and alcohol. I don't think I would spend that much. Like, I drink after work. I'll have a cocktail or whatever. But your you know, chosen drug is a lot more expensive than mine.
Yeah, and look at how the laws are, you know. But, you know, to each his own. You know, everybody's got their own vice, I suppose, I guess. So, I want to say keep up the great work with your job. You do a terrific job.
It's really nice of you to call. I appreciate you getting in here. Have a good day.
Well, thank you. Yeah, you too, sir. Bye-bye.
This is George. Hey, George, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? Hi.
Yeah, he's just talking about the 28 grams as an ounce type thing. That's what usually it is.
My phone lines are lighting up, so evidently people know more about this than I do.
Yeah, a lot of people smoke pot out there.
You know, the only thing that bothers me about that, and I don't know, maybe this isn't true, but I have it in my head like this. And I don't know if you think like this or not, George, but if you do that, it's illegal. That means you're buying it from people that are breaking the law. And I'm not too worried about you and the guy that sold it to you, but somewhere up the food chain, I'm thinking they're really bad guys who are cutting the heads off of people in Mexico. You know, I sort of link all of these things back that way. And I wouldn't want to be part of that sort of commerce. Does that ever cross your mind?
Yeah, a little bit. You have to consider where it's coming from. But think about this. I knew a kid who used to be a gangbanger. And I asked him, what would happen if they legalized pot? And he said, none of my friends would be in jail.
Instead,
you buy things from the big corporations who are raping the rainforest throughout Central America, John, and think not twice about it.
Oh, well, listen, I own a pair of Nikes, and I try not to think about the conditions under which those were manufactured, too. Interesting. Hey, George, thanks for the phone call.
You're welcome.
Have a good day. I mean, we all are guilty of that a little bit, but paying people in China a substandard wage is not against the law. So you can go to bed at night buying Nikes more easily than you can if you smoke marijuana.
Really? If it's legal, if the oppression's legal, you're more okay with it?
Your Honor, I'd like that statement stricken from the records. Like, this is now Sean walking the last statement.
I know. I was going to use a term from him, but I thought I won't because it's just.
Ron, you're on WGN. Jump in here.
Hey, John. My name's Ron. I have been working with a local cannabis pharmacy that is doing all prescription pharmacy at this time, all prescription marijuana at this time. And the regulations are very stringent, but once you qualify for the regulations, you just walk into the pharmacy and you order what you need. They do have everything barcoded, so nothing comes in and nothing goes out without being barcoded. I can't see why the state of Illinois doesn't see this because the revenue is huge. But I can give your producer his name and his number, the gentleman who owns this local pharmacy, and he would love to come on and talk to you.
Yeah, but what are you saying? I mean, you can buy medicinal marijuana, right?
Correct. But the state of Illinois is still very tough. Las Vegas is very loose. California is very loose. Illinois is just starting to...
Oh, you mean in terms of what illnesses or pain qualifies for a prescription?
Correct.
Yeah. You know, that's something that just makes me nuts. I spend more time in Minnesota until just now. I've moved back to Illinois. But in Minnesota, they've really been tough about that, too. And I think, how dare you tell me that my pain or my glaucoma or my whatever isn't sufficient enough for me to enjoy the benefits of medical marijuana? I hate that judging other people's suffering. You just can't do that.
And I have to agree with you 100%. And knowing people that are actively using the product, they're just getting humongous comfort from it.
Do they get high? There's nothing wrong with that. I'm just wondering if they do.
Yes. There is some that you have a slighter high, and there's some that's very heavy duty. But I can only see people in cancer centers and all kinds of different uses that would flourish using the product.
Yeah, I'm with you. Hey, Ron, thanks for the phone call. It's 1:48. I'll pick up just a couple more phone lines. There's a couple of other things we want to get to. Also, in the 2 o'clock hour, our Trump talk segment, we take time to talk Trump at 2. See how I did that? And we're talking this time about North Korea. It's not negative talk. It's not positive talk. It's just news talk, and we'll do that a little after 2 o'clock. It'll be what's happening in North Korea and what should happen next on WGN. By the way, out in our street, out on Michigan Avenue on the sidewalk, here's a couple of folks holding up a Cubs poster. Hi there, fellow. What's your name?
My name is Big Biz, CEO of Live Wire Entertainment.
CEO of Live Wire Entertainment. What have you got?
We have a new Cubs song and video out, World Champions. You can check it out on YouTube right now. It's out on YouTube. It's World Champion by Livewire. LYVEWYREZ.
LYVE, live with a Y. Wires, WYREZ. Wires with a Y and a Z. So if I do a YouTube search of that.
If you go to YouTube search, you can type up actually New Cubs song, World Champions. You'll see it pop up.
Really? New Cubs song, World Champions.
That. We shot it in Wrigley Field like 2 weeks ago.
Cool. What kind of music is it?
It's more like a pop, epic, R&B, hip hop.
Yes. No kidding. How's it sound?
Sounds great.
I knew awesome. You were going to say that.
It sounds awesome. Different from what
so you got past. You're emailing me the song. You got the DVD there for me.
Yes.
Okay, walk it over to the Trip Tower and we'll play it on the radio.
Thank
okay.
you.
Good luck, guys.
Right. John Wilson at what now?
John Williams at WGNRadio.com.
WGN Radio. Okay, I'm doing it right now. We'll be right back.
Just happened to be passing by. By the way, Donna's listening patiently, and I wanted to talk to her, too. We're talking about Canada legalizing marijuana. The whole flipping country. Hey, Donna, this is John. You're on the air.
Hey. Yeah, I was just wanted to chime in because I just recently got my medical marijuana card. I had brain surgery a couple years back and really struggled with balance issues. And but there's no one at the dispensaries really here in Illinois to guide you. Like, there's no medical people unless I'm at the wrong dispensaries. Is that common?
I don't know. So you get a prescription, you take it there, they give you the amount, but then what do you want? What do you want for guidance? Like how much to use or how to deal with
the
effects?
I don't get a prescription. I just get a card that says I can have X amount of grams.
Yeah.
And then they're supposed to help me figure out what would be best.
What do you want to know? What do you want to know, Donna?
I just want to know what I should be taking, what would be best for, you know, to help me with balance and all kinds of issues that I have. And
but
when
you...
they weren't real helpful. They didn't really know. So it's like, it's just ordinary people that work there.
Yeah.
They don't have any medical background or anything. And I guess that's the way it is. I don't know if that's the way it is in every state or what.
That's interesting. You'd think that it would, I guess it wouldn't be a pharmacist or a nurse. I don't know who is the person that's qualified. But what do you want from them? You want them to tell you what, which brand, which type of marijuana will be best for your
Correct.
Condition?
Right, because I'm not really looking, you know, to get high or anything. I'm just looking for assistance with issues of balance. And
have you tried some of the marijuana?
I tried some that really messed me up.
It didn't help, huh?
If you received it, you must have...
I was like a major panic attack, and it exaggerated all my symptoms, and it was like a nightmare.
If you received the medical marijuana, though, you must have been given a prescription for it, correct?
No. I don't get like an RX or anything. Just get... on my card, it says that I can have... I think it's like 28 grams or something, 23 grams per visit. That's all it says.
This is amazing to me. I mean, if you have a condition so severe that we're actually going to let you take marijuana, we sort of deem that rather extraordinary. You would think that the doctor would say, now try the name of this. They have funny names sometimes.
Right, exactly.
But, you know,
but there are no doctors.
Happy times, whatever, and then you go there, and then they say, okay, for dizziness because of brain injury, you need just a half an ounce, and you need to smoke it, or you need to, you know, eat it, or whatever. They're giving you no guidance like that at all, huh?
No, well, the person that gave me the guidance, who was a real nice kid, literally a kid.
No, that's not what no, that answered my question.
But to get the card, a doctor had to have approved you to get the card in the first place, correct?
Correct.
Okay,
correct.
So have you asked that doctor for guidance?
That direction.
What about the doctor? Did the doctor give you any guidance on that?
No.
All right, I'm out of time today. Listen, hold the line for just a second, Donna. I'm going to play back part of this conversation one day next week because a lot of people are calling in, and they are saying, okay, here's what happened to me in Seattle, where they're much more professional about it, or here's what happened to me someplace else. So you haven't heard the last of Donna in this conversation. Be here for us about this time on Monday. Thank you, Steve. 207, John Williams in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Ave.
I don't know if this sends a message. North Korea is a problem. The problem will be taken care of.
207.
Lord have mercy.
Lord have mercy. Our numbers in the news. Current events quiz at 240. You listen to GNU. Pay attention to the news. We've got a little current events quiz we like to play, and we'll do that around 2:40 here on the John Williams Show. Steve Bertrand just had one quick question that I should know the answer to, but I don't. Maybe you do. When did they start throwing the ball back onto the field after a home run at Wrigley Field? He just saw a replay of a home run hit by an opposing team 27 years ago, and the fans threw it back. How long has that, speaking of Cubs traditions, we started the show with that, how long has that been going on? How long have they been throwing the ball back? I wonder if there was some great game where some painful home run was hit into the stands and somebody said, I don't want this, it hurts too much, they threw it back, it became the tradition. I don't know. Maybe you do. Maybe Emma Ashford knows. Hey, Emma, why don't you just talk a little baseball with me for a second first. Emma, do you know when they started throwing the ball back onto the field at Wrigley Field?
I'm afraid I don't know that much about baseball.
Well, that's not why I called you, so you really don't have to know that much about baseball. Welcome back to the show, Emma. I appreciate you giving us some of your time this afternoon. Emma Ashford is a research fellow at the Cato Institute. So we called her to talk to us a little bit about North Korea, about what's happening in Washington, D.C., and what's happening in the world. Here's just one quick note. President Trump hit the golf course Friday as he and his aides braced for what North Korea calls a big event, possibly some kind of nuclear test. Administration officials have said they're hopeful that China can dissuade its communist neighbor North Korea from conducting a nuclear explosion or a missile test. Meanwhile, the North Koreans have accused Trump of fomenting tensions in the region with tactics that range from aggressive tweets to this week's movements of a U.S. strike carrier group into the region. We will go to war if they choose, said their foreign minister. Kim Jong-un's government has pledged, quote, a big and important event for tomorrow. It'll be the 105th anniversary or birthday of the country's founder, Kim Il-sung, the current president's grandfather. In recent years, it has marked the date with rockets and missile tests. U.S. officials said they suspect that North Korea is planning another underground nuclear test. That's about as much as I know. What would you add to that to start, Emma?
Well, the situation seems to be, I don't want to say spiraling out of control, but the tensions are higher than we have seen them in a very long time on the Korean Peninsula. And it doesn't seem to be being helped by President Trump's very, I guess, assertive approach to this, redirecting that carrier group towards the Korean Peninsula, talking big on Twitter about how we might do something. And just last night, there was a leaked NBC News from, I believe, anonymous intel officials that said that the U.S. was considering some kind of decapitation strike or response if North Korea tests a nuclear weapon. So this is all very concerning because it could lead to conflict.
Well, is it necessary? Maybe it is, right? I mean, if North Korea does have nukes, and it sounds like they do, maybe as many as five, if they have ICBMs, which could deliver them farther than just to South Korea, maybe it's about time we started to assert ourselves in that region.
There's certainly something to be said for that. Previous administrations have kicked this can down the road for a very long time. And right now, what the situation is that the North Koreans almost definitely have nuclear weapons. They've tested them. We're pretty sure of that. They have shorter-range missiles they can probably deliver them with, but they don't yet seem to have an ICBM that would let them actually reach the United States. And so stopping them before they get to that stage should be a major goal of U.S. foreign policy. But I think it's pretty questionable if what Trump is doing right now is actually going to stop that.
Why are we at odds with North Korea? Have they done anything to us, per se?
Well, there was the Korean War, which has technically never ended. There are still thousands, tens of thousands of American troops sitting in South Korea near the demilitarized zone with North Korea. And so this is a conflict that has been going on for a very long time, but it's basically been at a stalemate since the 1960s. But the situation that we're in now is North Korea isn't really a threat to the U.S. today, but if it develops an ICBM, it has the potential to be a threat. And so U.S. policymakers do need to do something, but it seems like more sanctions or diplomatic approaches are probably going to be more useful than this kind of saber rattling, which actually could end up causing the very conflict we're trying to prevent.
You know, I mean, to me, it sounds like an unstable government or country. None of us are fans of North Korea or Kim Jong-un. But at the end of the day, I think if you ask me to characterize the countries that we should worry about, the only reason I would put North Korea on that list is because of the instability of Kim Jong-un. We're not in a big trade war with them. I mean, you know, we've normalized relations with Vietnam, for crying out loud, in Japan. So I would imagine that the Korean War in our background is not the sort of thing that means we have to still be hostile with them over, right?
Oh, no, that is not the problem. The problem over many years has been North Korea's kind of intransigence and continuing to test missiles and setting up their nuclear program, all of these steps that they're taking, and their open hostility to basically everyone around them except China. What's interesting is that the North Koreans do have legitimate security concerns, and they're looking around the world. They looked at what happened in Iraq, they looked at what happened in Libya, and they see that actually having nuclear weapons might be the best way to stop the U.S. taking action against you in the future. So if you're a murderous dictator like Kim Jong-un, having nuclear weapons is a pretty good hedge to keep your power.
Yeah, that answers my question, I think, a little bit better. But, you know, Russia has nukes and China has nukes, and Lord knows we have problems with them, but we don't think that they will irrationally use them. Maybe that's the difference. We worry that this knucklehead might just, for whatever reason, launch them.
The danger isn't so much that North Korea will irrationally use these weapons. I don't really think there's any country with nuclear weapons where the leader is irrational enough to start using nuclear weapons first. The problem is when you get in a situation where tensions rise, things start to escalate, the pressure is on for one state or the other to make the first move because they benefit from doing so, and you end up in a conflict situation without meaning to get there. And that's how a lot of wars in history have started.
Yeah, right.
So the potential is real.
And, you know, and so then the question becomes, okay, so then what do you do about that? You know, do you backpedal a little bit, or because this guy's a knucklehead, you know, maybe you don't push him too much? Or maybe you do. I would hate to have to make that call. What are the options then for the United States? So we've put this carrier strike force closer to North Korea. What are the options for the president, Emma?
Well, there are the military options, but they're very bad options. The decapitation strike option that was sort of leaked to some of the press a couple of weeks ago, that's the idea that you send in something like SEAL Team 6, and they try and, you know, kill Kim Jong-un and his senior leaders before they can retaliate. That's an incredibly risky strategy to do that. And other than that, there really aren't very many options. You could, I suppose, make some kind of targeted strike in the hopes that that would deter the North Koreans, but typically the North Koreans haven't really responded well to that kind of thing. They always escalate when we try and approach them. And the only thing that leaves is the diplomacy option. And that's actually the best option here, is sitting down, getting back to the table in some sort of multilateral process with the Chinese, the Russians, the North and South Koreans, and actually trying to come to an agreement where, even if they don't give up their nuclear weapons, they at least stop developing more and stop developing an ICBM.
I wonder what the president means or what he could do when he says, if China doesn't help, we'll do it by ourselves. I wonder what do it by ourselves could even mean.
And this, I think, is the concern with Donald Trump's foreign policy on this and on many other issues. It's not clear. He could be talking big to try and encourage the Chinese leadership to take more of a hard stance on North Korea in the hopes that it'll work. Alternately, he could just mean that he intends to take unilateral action, and we probably won't know until he's done it, if the last couple of weeks are anything to go by.
Is something like what happened in Syria an option with North Korea? Find out where the base is or the missiles are, or I don't know if you want to bomb plutonium, but, you know, do something with Tomahawk missiles to take out their capacity to use nuclear weapons.
So all of these military strike options, whether it's sending in people or using missiles or bombers or whatever else, they all have the same problem, which is you need to be sure that your intelligence is good enough to make sure that you have got all of it. And that is a really tough problem, particularly against a country like North Korea that is so closed, so difficult to get into, so difficult for information to get out of. So you would have to basically bet that you get it all in that strike. Otherwise, again, you start some kind of a bigger conflict. And so this is a real concern.
And that'd be an act of war. I mean, you know, do we want to launch the first strike in a war with North Korea? And then who knows who joins in on something like that? I mean, that's crazy. Okay, that's a bad idea. Never mind that. Take that one off the table. Don't do that. But one last thing. What about economic sanctions? I mean, could the United States and China make it more difficult for them to get oil or anything else?
Well, this is where China comes into the equation. And the U.S. has already done pretty much everything we can on the sanctions front. There's no trade with North Korea. Most of our allies don't trade with North Korea. But the Chinese still do. The Chinese sell natural resources to North Korea. They buy things from North Korea. If the Chinese really wanted to come down hard on the North Koreans, they could. But they don't. And one reason is those U.S. troops that I mentioned earlier, the ones in South Korea. The Chinese are scared that if North Korea collapses, if they put too much pressure on it, they might be stuck with a unified Korea on their border with a bunch of U.S. troops there. So our presence in South Korea makes this whole thing more difficult as well.
Lastly, what do you think is going to happen tomorrow?
I think the North Koreans will do something. Now, it could be a nuclear test. It could equally be that they parade a new missile down the street in Pyongyang. You know, they're very unpredictable. But as to what Donald Trump will do in response, I'm afraid I don't have any idea. And again, I think that's something that we really should all be very concerned about with this administration's foreign policy. It should be more easy for us to discern what he's going to do in these very difficult conflict-based situations.
Emma Ashford is a research fellow at the Cato Institute. Nice to talk to you, Emma. We appreciate you joining us today. Put that in the file here. That one goes over there. So, Steve, I'm not real sure about my source on this. It's from a blog called guysgirl.com.
Okay.
And in doing some research on various baseball, you know, traditions, she said the most difficult part of this research was finding out actually when it began. Apparently, back in 1969, the founder of the now famous Cubs bleacher bums, Ron Grousel, was the first fan to ever throw a home run ball back onto the field after the legendary Hank Aaron smacked one into the stands.
Whoa.
Boy, you want that ball back, don't you?
Right. I'm sorry, that's not when the modern tradition started.
I don't believe that, no.
It started during my early adulthood or adulthood.
Or maybe that was the first time and then it didn't become a tradition until later?
I don't think it did. I mean, I just asked you.
He did it in 1969.
Good, I'm happy for him. I don't doubt him. But, I mean, I was just watching on the monitor. I asked you off air.
Yeah.
Bob Walk hit a home run against the Cubs in 1990 for the Pirates, and they threw the ball back. That was 27 years ago. I think it had to be right about when it started. I mean, I'm trying to remember. I was a season ticket holder. 88, 89, right around in then. And Maybe they were doing it then, but I feel like it was a fairly new thing. They weren't doing it in the 70s.
I don't remember it in the 70s either.
No.
Okay, here's another source that maybe you've heard of that's more credible than guysgirl.com. This one's called newyorktimes.com.
Not everyone believes them anymore.
The tradition, like so much else in Cubs history, apparently traces its roots back to 1969, the year the Cubs collapsed in the last part of the season, blowing a 10-game lead over the Mets. You thought it would have some sort of Mets roots. It says here, that season at Wrigley, Hank Aaron hit his 521st career home run, tied him with Ted Williams, and the ball was caught by a 24-year-old bartender who is a denizen of the left field bleachers named Ron Grousel. Grousel said he offered the ball to Aaron after the game as the slugger was making his way to the Braves' bus. Aaron refused, apparently angry that fans in right field had dumped beer on him when he ventured near the wall. The next season, when Aaron hit a home run at Wrigley Field and Grousel caught it, he said he was still so upset with Aaron's rejection and maybe everything else that happened in 69 that he threw the ball back onto the field. Now, wait a minute.
I don't believe that story.
I don't either, because I think their source was guysgirl.com on this.
Right.
But also that means that Grousel was there for two of Aaron's home runs.
And
right?
caught them both.
And offered one. Boy, this sounds apocryphal, doesn't it?
It does.
He offers it to Aaron. Aaron's, this is,
I'm
no.
telling you.
You know what?
When I was cheering for Davey Rosello and Mick Kelleher, Larry Bittner, George Mitterwald, the fans were not throwing the ball back in the stands. It happened, I think, in the, maybe after 84 or around 84.
This article was written 10-10-2016. I don't know why they were writing about it in October of last year.
I guess World Series stuff.
October 10th. We're still playing October 10th, though.
Yeah.
Huh? When was the last game of the World Series?
October, like, 38th. It was late.
Oh, when it did November?
It was pretty late.
I've kind of, I can't believe, I guess, yeah, that's right, that's right. It goes late in October into right. November. I was on a cruise at the time, so I missed some of these games.
Anyway, I'm telling you, I was surprised. I was shocked that it was 1990 when they did it, but they must it had to have been a few years before
so
that.
Wait a minute, but then this is the New York Times writing a timely article as the Cubs were in the playoffs.
That's by someone who had to get a Cubs feature out ahead of Game 6 of something.
I was going to say, but this predates fake news. This was before the New York Times lost its way.
Yeah, well, that story might have happened, and that might be legend and everything, but that doesn't, and that might be the first time it happened.
But there was a gap between then and when we started to do it right.
Yeah, and now that it happens every time.
Okay, we got a couple calls on this. We'll take some, okay, we're going to resolve this. While you were diligently working on the news there, you were watching the Cubs game, and you noticed that one of the replays they had showed a home run being thrown back onto the field at Wrigley from 27 years ago.
Yeah, 1990.
And you wondered out loud, when did that tradition start?
Right, because I don't remember it from my childhood.
I found two sources, one of which you may have heard of, the New York Times. And they said that it started in 1969 when a guy caught a Hank Aaron home run.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next year caught another Hank Aaron home run and upset that Hank Aaron didn't act nicely to him after the first catching of the Aaron home run, decided to throw the second one back. Actually, another version of it says he gave it to the umpire. I don't know if he tossed it to the umpire or handed it to the umpire, but another version of this story says he gave it to the umpire. But both of them go back to 1969 and a Hank Aaron home run.
I don't know what to say. There's no evidence backing me up here. No one is calling to support me.
Well, let's see. We got a lot of calls.
Okay.
Patrick, you're on the air. Are you there? Hey, Patrick.
There's no evidence backing
you. Okay, that's him.
My point is not that it didn't happen then. I'm just saying that when the pressure to do it at every game, every home
right.
run,
well, then
it wasn't like that until, you know, when I was growing up watching it. Just I don't remember that.
No, and when Jack Brickhouse was calling the games right. on Channel 9, I don't remember the balls getting lobbed back out.
He would have scolded those fans.
or Lou Boudreau would have said, now you youngsters watching this game,
keep the ball home and play with it.
Don, you're on the air.
Hello, King John. How you doing today?
Hey, man. Thanks for calling. What are you saying?
Well, as you know, I'm a White Sox fan, not a Cubs fan, so I have no skin in this game whatsoever. But I remember watching Bleacher Bums when it first debuted back on Channel 11, and George Wendt was in it, like, before Cheers. So this is back in the 70s, and they referenced the throwing back of the home run. I think it was Wentz's character that caught a home run, and the rest of the bleacher bums were chanting to him, throw it back.
Wow.
So it goes back at least that far.
Wow, I just don't remember it that way. I wonder if that bleacher bums production is what got it going.
Okay, but are you with me that they didn't do it in the, like, in the Dave Kingman era? Or you think they might have?
That would have been in the Kingman era because, you know, you could probably look on IMDb to see when Bleacher Bums first came out, or on WTTW's website, because I think that was a Second City production, but I'm sure that was mid-70s when that came out. I don't think they started it.
Well, that was the play about 1969, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, so... Here's the deal. Let's do this. Don, I got an assignment for you.
Driving through Michigan, John.
So pull over. I want you to get out the device you're calling on. Go to YouTube. Pull up some of those old Dave Kingman games where we're playing the Phillies and the score was 22-23, one of those games. And I'll bet that there's some video out there. And see if, because you have ample opportunity back then, see if they were throwing the balls back. Just see if you can witness one of those for me, Don.
Well, to be honest with you, John, since my wife would like me home before the rush hour hits Chicago.
Yeah, all right, fine.
I'm not going to stop and look that up for you this afternoon.
It is nice penance, though, to make a White Sox fan watch Cubs highlights.
Yeah, really. This is the holiest of seasons. I think you should do that. All right. Here's the deal, Don. I'm going to let you go. But if you do that this weekend or sometime next week, will you let me know?
I'll let you know, John.
I think I know what that means. Mike, jump in here. You're on the air.
How you doing, John?
Good.
So the Cubs won the World Series on November 2nd.
Yeah.
That was the seventh game. I want to say it was on a Wednesday.
Yeah, yeah.
And then that parade was 2 days later.
Yeah, if this is you reminding me that, yeah, they played in October, you dummy. Yeah, I don't know where my brain was when I said that.
That's okay.
By the way, are you Matt Bubala's brother?
That's true, I am.
Oh, wow. Now I hear your voice. Matt, my longtime producer and longtime friend, I now hear your voice a little bit. Count to 10 or say, John, I love your show.
Uno, dos, tres, cuatro, cinco, seis, siete, ocho, nueve, diez.
Same sense of humor.
There you go.
You'll appreciate this, Mike. I got an email from my friend Roberta King, who listens to us in Peoria, Illinois, and she said, the Cubs are doing Bubalas. And I said, oh, really? I didn't know what the record was when she wrote that. But I said, if they win 5 out of 9, it'll be playoff time. Before last year, maybe 10, 15 years ago, and we were always wondering if we were going to be on pace to make the playoffs, Matt Bubala, your brother, my then producer, calculated that if you win 5 out of 9 games, that's all. You will win 90 in the season. If you win 90 in the season, you'll make the playoffs. So 5 out of 9, it will be playoff time, Bubala. And a guy wrote a song about it, and it's a really good song, too, about the Bubalas. I don't know if you remember that, Mike, but it just came to my mind.
I don't remember it. I'd be glad to hear it if you were to play it.
All right, I got to do that next Monday, too. Keep listening, Mike. It's nice to hear your voice.
Hey, you remember back in 2003 when we met before the Cubs played the Marlins in the playoff game?
Actually, I do.
All right. Okay, hey, John, thanks a lot.
Listen, it's nice to talk to you again, Mike. Stay in touch, say hi to your brother for us, and we'll pick this conversation up on Monday.
Very good.
How about that? All right, we're out of time. We got to pause here. In fact, let's take our break now. My number is 312-981-7200. We're going to do our numbers in the news current events quiz. I need you to call that number, 312-981-7200. We'll take caller number 10. You get a lifeline. Steve Bertrand will be it. We've got 10 questions for you. You listen to WGN, so you're a pretty smart person. Play our numbers in the news current events quiz next.
Numbers, numbers in the news, oh yeah. To play with numbers.
And there is no prize.
There's no prize on Numbers in the News. We play for pride on the John Williams Show. And isn't that the greatest prize of all? Dave, you're on the air. How are you?
Hey, John, it's always good to talk to you. We're on a snow day today at my high school, so there's no chance that my kids are going to hear just how abysmally I'm sure I'm going to score on this.
Dave, if you get all 10 of them right, we'll invite you back as our reigning champion. You have two lifelines you can use to Steve Bertrand. Are you ready?
I am ready to go.
This is our Numbers in the News current events quiz. Question number one, how many diamonds are in the Cubs championship rings? Is it 25 diamonds in each ring or 108 diamonds? Wait a minute, I didn't hear his answer. What's your answer?
Well, somebody heard it. Yeah, 108.
108 is correct. Fun Easter candy stat for you. What's the number one jelly bean flavor in America? Is it A, red licorice? No, is it A, red cherry, or is it B, black licorice?
I prefer black licorice, and I'm not a big jelly bean person, but the answer would be red cherry. Oh, John, you're killing me.
And you said it with such confidence, too. That's what I like about you, Dave.
Well, you know, that's me. I'm all confidence, no knowledge.
That could be the theme for this show. United Airlines value dropped how much the day after that passenger was dragged off the flight? It went up and down that day. Did they, on paper, lose $100 million or $250 million?
I saw several figures, but I believe the one is $250 million.
Two for three. What percentage of Americans spend 1 hour per day on a dating app? Think about this. What percentage of Americans spend an hour a day on a dating app? Is it 1 in 10 of us, or is it 1 in 100 of us?
Oh, John. It's either would be sad. I'll go with 1 in 10. What the heck?
That's crazy.
It is. We're lonely people.
I know that, but an hour a day. If you get off the app and go outside, you'll meet somebody.
Get off your app? Is that what you're saying?
By the way, nothing wrong with meeting people on a dating site these days. It seems to be the way people do it. I have no qualms with that. But an hour a day? I mean, when do you get around to looking at porn? It just strikes me as, if you take viewing pornography, visiting dating sites.
Ask your next question, John.
All right, here we go. How many people were involuntarily denied boarding by United Airlines last year? Obviously, Dr. Dow was involuntarily denied flight. He was actually on the plane, but this happens more than just once a year. How often are people sold tickets and they don't let them on? 25 times by United Airlines last year, or 3,765 times last year?
Well, you know, I really feel badly that I'm not talking to Steve, but I'm going to go with my gut and say 25.
25. 3,700 times people with a ticket there at the gate were told they could not get on the plane.
I knew that one, Dave.
How many majors has had Sergio Garcia played in before winning the Masters last Saturday? 24 or 74 major appearances before he finally won one?
Oh, and you're saying a major, not the Masters, but a major.
Correct.
Right? Yeah. Okay. You know what? I'm riddled with guilt for not asking Steve the last time, so I'm going to ask Steve for a lifeline.
I have no idea. No, it's 74.
All right, I'll go with that.
How many people were caught crossing the southwest border last month? Last month, between the United States and Mexico, the lowest number in 17 years, how many people were caught crossing the border? Caught crossing the border, was it 644 people or 12,000 people?
Oh, there's certainly a difference between crossing and getting caught, but I will say 12,000.
12,000 is correct. Hokey smokes.
That's a low.
That strikes me as a really large number. And that's the lowest it's been for any single month in 17 years. I did not know the business was that brisk for catching people trying to get over.
This is where all the good dating sites are, so.
See how he ties it all together? He's doing his own show at home. Here we go. The snackable insect market. We talked to somebody who's now selling crickets.
Oh, I called you on that one, too, by the way.
You were one of our callers?
Yeah, this is Sheriff Davey.
Yeah, I know that, but what did you have to say about that?
I actually had some chips made with cricket flour
at the
Fallon Garden Show.
Yeah, and that was pretty good, right?
Yeah, I couldn't tell the difference between that and regular flour.
See, it's the way to go. Snackable insect market is now valued at $18 million or $424 million.
I will say $424.
World champion Chicago Cubs, we already did the ring one. How about this one? What percentage of Americans get their taxes audited? 9% or 0.7%?
I will say 0.7%.
Melania Trump won a settlement from that British tabloid, the Daily Mail, this week. You know, they said inaccurate and unkind things about her modeling career. She reportedly received in the settlement $1 and an apology, or $2.9 million and an apology.
Well, since Steve is so knowledgeable on issues of fashion, I'm going to defer to Steve again.
Be number two.
$2.9 million
for the first lady.
I trust Steve implicitly. I'll go with Steve.
Okay, I'll give you a couple more. O'Hare is the number six airport in America for money left behind at TSA checkpoints. How much money was left behind last year? Change in those little bowls and whatnot. Was it $25,000 or $25 million?
$25,000.
Is correct. Here's your last one. How many people on Earth live on less than a dollar a day? How many people on Earth live on less than a dollar a day? 1 in 50 or 1 in 6?
If you can call that living in either case. But I hate to say 1 in 6.
1 in 6 is correct. How about that? In fact, there's a woman who's written a book about it. She won a Pulitzer Prize for her photography, where she sort of documents how a very high percentage of the world's population live. She's going to join me on my show on Saturday. You may have seen her on the CBS Morning News this week, but she's fascinating. And it's always always fun to talk to you, Dave. Thanks for calling in this afternoon.
Thanks, John. Have a great Easter, you folks.
Dave, if you get all 10 right, you return as our reigning champion, but you will not be returning. You understand that.
Oh, I know, but that will not deter me from listening, John.
That's a boy. Thank you, Dave.
All right, bye now.
What is it with WGN radio host Richard Roper?
I don't know, John. I just come in once in a while to see if all is well, and apparently it's not.
I'm so glad you're here, because normally Anna and Ro come strolling in right about now. Are you on in their first hour?
Well, you are such a keen observer. You always have been a social satirist, a commentator, and you immediately looked at me and said, "You're not Anna DeVlantes." I'm almost positive.
That's why they paid me the big bucks.
That's why you're a mainstay, my friend. Well, Anna's off today, so I'm actually going to fill in for the full 4 hours with Rokan, who is probably just wrapping up a therapy session somewhere as we speak.
Yeah. Or he's in traffic, but one of the two is the reason he's not here.
His therapist actually has carpal tunnel syndrome from looking at his own watch.
I saw you on TV just the other day. Now, what would that have been? What do you do on TV?
I am on... I love that sound, by the way.
It's a Chicago institution.
Right. I'm on Good Day Chicago as the co-host every morning, 7 to 10, right here on Fox 32, right around the corner from the...
And how long have you been doing that?
Almost 2 years now.
Because when I left, you weren't. I went away for about 4 or 5 years.
Right.
I came back, you were on TV.
I was on ABC when you last left. And it's how it goes in this business, John. You end up going around in circles. And if you wind up where you started, it's not a bad thing. I was with Fox and our friends, Bob Surratt, 20-some years ago.
Right.
And, like most TV veterans, you eventually wear out your welcome just about everywhere.
Well, Bob certainly did. All right. I didn't say that on the radio, did I? All right, so it's 2 o'clock, or pardon me, 3 o'clock, according to that beep. It's nice to see you, Richard Roper. Anna not, Ro yes, you for sure.
It's like the old Johnny Carson. Doc is here, Ed is here, Tommy's in for Ed.